Silke will read the preamble.
Hi, good evening. My name is Silke. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Howard will read the steps.
Thanks. Hi, I'm Howard. I'm an alcoholic. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and flawless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
And Deborah will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you. Thank you. Tonight is anniversary night. So the format of this meeting will be the 10-minute speaker will speak on the 12th tradition, and then it will be followed by our information break, and then the main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our anniversary celebrants. Our 10-minute speaker is Rajesh.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks, sir. I'm Rajesh, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow. I'm really, really overwhelmed right now. I want to thank everyone in this group, before I go anywhere, for all the service you do to make Atlanta Group the best home group, I don't know, I've ever been in. This meeting wouldn't happen without all of you. I'm grateful that I have the opportunity to be a small part of it. And I want to also thank our overall chairperson for 2009, Heidi. You rocked it this year. You rocked it this year. All right, so tonight I'm here to talk about the 12th tradition. Or hopefully, as my sponsor says, you're not going to talk about it. God's going to speak through you, because if you're talking about it, I can tell you it's going to be a horror show. So let's rock tradition 12. All right, here's the long form. This is so beautiful. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. So in the beginning, anonymity was sort of born out of fear. And if you look at the big book, there's like three references. Of course, I'm going to do all my homework, right? So there's like three references to anonymity. And, you know, early on, it was like the fear of being overwhelmed by a deluge of inquiries. And, like, I always think of it as sort of like a skull and bones or like Knights Templar type situation where people are like skulking around and going to meetings and, you know, because they don't know what's going to happen. And then as AA grows, so did anonymity problems. And they were like, you know, I'm really enthusiastic over someone else's recovery, so I'm going to tell you all about it, right? I'm going to give you his whole history and how it was horrible. I'm going to tell you what he shared about in the meeting. But he's doing great now, you know? And that didn't create a very safe environment for people. And, you know, of course, like, I'm a super promoter. Like that's my natural inclination. And without some guidance from Tradition 12, I'd probably be like, you know, barely dry, like Lady Gaga super promoter on YouTube, like talking about, you know, the spectacular recovery I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And then I might go drink, and that's not going to be helpful, and that's not going to be attraction. So as we were growing, there were these anonymity problems that were growing too, and I saw this firsthand in India a couple weeks ago when I was there. The big book just came out in Hindi, the 12 and 12 just came out in Hindi in June of 2009, and I visited the inner group in Delhi, and I spoke to some of the members, and they were all talking about how, like, you know, they haven't, like, people are leaving the meeting and then gossiping about what they heard, you know, sharing with family members what another member shared in the meeting. And I kind of need to look at what my motives are when I'm doing that, you know? Like, usually it's because I want to be the center of attention. I want to, like, hold your, you know, aura, right? Like, I want to be... It's an ego-feeding proposition for me. So, right, so then we had this born out of fear, not telling anyone, and then we had the swinging to the other side of balance, the super promoter side. And really, the traditions checklist is awesome, as is sort of asking myself, you know, what if everyone was exhibiting and doing the behavior that I was doing? What if everyone was anonymity breaking? What if everyone was, you know, posting their sponsee's fifth step on Facebook or whatever, like gossiping about people, you know. And that's the idea around the practical application of anonymity. I can't break anyone else's anonymity. I shouldn't share what I hear here at the meeting. But, you know, outside of press, radio, and film, like that's the only rule. Like outside of press, radio, and film, I can decide what I want to do with my anonymity. Now, of course, I have to, like, figure out, you know, what's my motive for breaking my anonymity? Is it to get something or is it to be helpful? Right? But that's only part of it, right? What we're talking about in Tradition 12 encompasses this but it's so much bigger. And I want to thank, you know, Ron, Heidi, and Giroux, who all spoke on the 12th tradition and I had a chance to listen to. And they kind of keyed me in on this. So I'm going to read something from Bill Wilson's final address, read by Lois Wilson at the New York Hilton in 1970 at the Bill Wilson Dinner Dance. Now, Bill was in the hospital. He was dying from late-stage emphysema, and he wasn't able and strong enough to attend. But he says in his letter, read by Lois, "If I were asked which blessings were most responsible for our growth as a fellowship and most vital to the continuity, I would say it's the concept of anonymity." All right? So there's the practical side, and then there's the spiritual application of anonymity. Because anonymity is way bigger. Way, way, way bigger. So all of the traditions ask that I give up my personal desires for the common good. You know, and anonymity embodies that sacrifice. You know, I have the opportunity to sacrifice by putting my desire for personal prestige and distinction aside for the good of the group and for the good of the common welfare of AA. And when we talk about principles before personalities, I had a chance to listen to Bob D, who does a much better job talking about this than me. You know, I came in and I thought it was, I had to put the principles before your personality. And really, okay, fine, I kind of see what you're saying, but you know, what really, really works for me is that I have to remember to put the principles before my personality. Okay, so what are the principles, right? Like, there's so many like great questions on that traditions checklist. Like, what are the principles? Okay, well, they're the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, and they're also the underlying spiritual concepts of, you know, honesty, love, service, right? That's what we're talking. I have to put those principles ahead of my personality. I can judge myself out of Alcoholics Anonymous pretty quickly. I can come to the home group and I can take your inventory, you know, and I can say, oh, they're not doing it right. He's not doing, is she going to share again? You know, why are you picking on him to speak? You know, don't you know we always say the same thing, you know? Oh, he's just pretending to be sober or he's not practicing the principle. I mean, God, I can take everyone's inventory. But what I really need to look at here is, can I show up and see what I can pack into the stream of life? You know, can I show up and put that third step into practice in all my affairs? You know, it's the surrendering of my personality, my self-centeredness, my selfishness. That's what allows me to stay in AA. And that's what allows me to be a worker amongst workers. You know, so it's principles before personalities. It's all about humility, right? It's all about humility. And anonymity, if you think about the definition of it, is like, you know, without acknowledgement, right? I need to go about and do my service without acknowledgement. You know, it's funny if you go to a watch and you hear someone and they're just switch sponsors, right? And they're sitting next to their sponsor at the watch. We don't all go in there and like, yeah, I used to sponsor. They are only there because of me, you know? No, we're saying, you know, that will be done. It's cool, without acknowledgement. So the spiritual application of anonymity is my opportunity to practice humility. It's my opportunity to practice humility so that the blessings that I've been given, you know, and I hate to say we, but really the blessings that we've been given. So we get to give and receive this gift of life so freely. You know, I got so many blessings in my life as a result of being sober. And thanks. And so I get to live in thankful contemplation of the one who has all the power, the one who is God. You know, this has been an incredible year for me. You know, my wife's pregnant. I get the opportunity to practice these principles in not just my home group, but in my home too. And I'm learning and I'm growing and I have so many power of examples here. I have so many people I get to walk with. I'm so glad I had a chance to be of service to the group this year. And I'm really touched by every one of you. And I just want to say God bless you all and thank you for allowing me to be a part of this.
And our main speaker tonight is Heidi. Wow. Hi, everybody. My name's Heidi, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Welcome to all the visitors and to everybody who's new. So just so you know, it's a tradition at this group that on the last Tuesday of the month, the person who's just served as the group chair speaks. So I didn't ask myself to speak. It's always good to open with a joke, right? No, but in all seriousness, it's such an honor to be here. And it's just, you know, my husband came tonight, and he's not in this program. And Earl, I really want to thank you so much for all your support this year. And I really, you know, yeah, exactly. No, but, you know, I feel really fortunate to get to be in the middle of AA and to, you know, to have had that early training from the time I was, you know, counting days, for the time I became active in a home group and got plugged into the steps, and I was taught to be active and to just get myself in the middle of AA. And you know, so as a result of that, the people who aren't in this program, who are also in my life, you know, get to share me. And I, you know, and that's something that is sometimes uncomfortable. And don't worry, I'll get into my story in just a minute, but it is uncomfortable. And if anybody thinks it's not, you know, that someday it gets comfortable or it gets easy to be like, I got to go to a meeting right now, or I need to take this phone call from a sponsee, or, you know, I need to leave this party early because I'm feeling cagey because I have alcoholism, you know, too bad, you know. I'd like to tell you that, like, at some point, you know, it's a total non-issue, and sometimes it's less of an issue than others, but, you know, I have to do a lot of things that other people don't have to do. You know, my husband can get mad and you know, can, like, work through it on his own time, and, you know, I think that's the truth anyway. But, you know, for me, last night we were having a lovely time at home. You know, what could be better? We're in domestic bliss coming on the tail end of the holidays, you know, surprise free night at home, you know, new surround sound system in the living room. And, you know, I get a phone call and pretty soon I'm, you know, and it's the end of the year and I'm like, you know, you got to make something happen this year. And I realized I had a resentment and I was at a certain point, you know, I was like, I got to go into the other room and write some inventory, you know, and I did, you know, I did. I stepped into, you know, the other half of our apartment. We don't have another room, but I stepped into the other part of our apartment and, you know, wrote out some resentments and fears and it's such an honor and it's such a privilege for me to be able to do that. Because I can't tell you that, like, I, you know, then I was a changed woman, you know, then I, everything was fine. And, you know, I did all the work that I could. And then it's time to step away from the page, essentially step away from myself and go and rejoin my husband and quit acting like an animal, you know. And, you know, like, be a nice wife. And, you know, for me to be standing up here telling you, like, time to be a nice wife, Heidi, is like a miracle. You know, the fact that I'm even married, I'm sitting here looking at Bonnie and Vince, like, they came to my wedding, you know. I mean, I have a picture of Vince at my wedding, like, with a cake, and I'm wearing a dress, and I'm sober, and we're all sober. And I still can't get over that one. So my sobriety date is September 3rd, 1990. I got sober 3 days after my 16th birthday. My friend Jake is here from Louisville. I met Jake just about a month ago at the Kentucky Conference of Young People in AA. I got to go down there and speak, and that was really neat. And that was, like, I think my second young people's conference in my whole sobriety that I'd ever been to. So if you're young and, you know, maybe you're feeling like, you know, you need to, like, that only young people can help other young people get sober, you know, I'm evidence that that's not true. I got sober in Port Angeles, Washington. I also want to say that if anybody is sitting here and they're like, your mind just, like, snapped shut and you're like, I'm not going to identify with her, I just encourage you, you know, because she got sober young and that's not my story and blah, blah, blah. And how could she possibly have a story? You know, how could she possibly drink that long? And you're right. Like, I didn't drink that long. But what I know is I know what alcohol did to me and for me. And I know that I was completely pickled by the time I was, you know, I was making promises to myself by the time I was 14 years old to cut down on my drinking. You know, I mean, that's just not normal. I was drinking over relationships when I was 15 years old, and beforehand, I was, you know, my solution to, I did my first geographic when I was 10 years old, and this was before I drank. You know, I grew up in a family that, you know, is like alcoholism is running marathons in my family. And, you know, that was really important when I first got sober. It was, I needed to tell everybody, you know, I grew up with alcoholism, you know, and like it was a big part of my movie. And over the years, I've had to learn to drop the movie and drop the story. You know, like I just had stories that I loved to tell. I needed you to know. I needed you to know how I grew up. And, you know, we didn't have. And like, I don't know, I was up here one year, I remember, and I shared that I had matching dishes. And, you know, and a couple people were like, oh, that's so cute that you shared about having matching dishes. But, you know, that was a big deal for me to have, like, you know, four plates that matched, that didn't have cracks in them, that hadn't been glued together, and that were they were mine, and that they were, like, clean. And what's so great is that it's not about the plates. It's not about, you know, sobriety is not about, like, you know, having nice things, because it's just not. It's about so much more. But all these things in my life show me. They show me that I show up, you know. And one of the biggest features for me of alcoholism is that I have an old idea in my mind that I'm a piece of crap and I'm never going to amount to anything. And that I'm destined to fail. I'm destined to drink no matter what. And I bet a lot of you can identify with that. And I'll tell you, I came to this group when I had about nine years sober. And Stephanie actually brought me to this group and she took me around and she introduced me to people. But I was coming out of a relationship and what had happened is I was with this person and, you know, and they had decided to, you know, they decided not to be an AA anymore and that they were not an alcoholic. They had gotten sober young and they felt like they had, you know, they'd done so much work on themselves that now they could drink safely. And I really thank God that I had that, you know, strong foundation, that training, you know, that something went off in my brain and was like, uh-oh, you're in trouble. You are in trouble, because I started to hear that too. I started to hear that, like, you know what, you were pretty young, and you know what, you have done a lot of work on yourself, and you know, maybe you haven't really hit bottom, you know, and that's another thing. Like, there's all these things that we hear in AA that are really, really helpful when interpreted the right way. One of those things for me was like, you know, so I got sober, as I told you, in this small logging town up on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington, where I was the young person. Like, everybody was, you know, at least 20 years older than me. And, you know, I was in high school, so I had a lunch pass. One of my periods, I think, like, fifth period or fourth period was the drug and alcohol, you know, support group. And, you know, and actually, ironically, this is kind of funny. My mom was the drug and alcohol counselor, so she gave me the assessment. I remember her sitting down with me and being like, I took the test, right? And she was like, you've been diagnosed with middle to late stage alcoholism. And I was like, oh, wow, you know, crazy. And, you know, and so anyway, during lunch, I would go to the Nooners meeting and I would go and hang out with people like Ronnie and Edaholic and, you know, and you know, all these people. But the bottom line is that we were the same on the inside, exactly the same on the inside. And those people really helped me get sober. Where was I going with this? I totally can't remember. Anyway, the point is, I want to tell you about, you know, before I even picked up the drink, I had alcoholism. I had the movie going. I never felt good enough, smart enough, pretty enough. You know, we moved a lot. You know, I learned how to people please you. And I have to say, actually having this commitment has really helped me with that. I've had to have uncomfortable conversations with people, and one of my biggest defects of character is being indirect, vague, hazy. That's my favorite state to live in. I like to keep everything kind of up in the air, you know, like, let's not nail it down, let's just kind of, you know, see what happens. And, you know, what's so beautiful about AA is, and like through the work of the 12 steps, is that I've learned that a lot of these defects of character, there's actually like a good part of them, because there is a part of me that is, you know, I like to be spontaneous, you know, I like to let things flow, I like to see what happens, you know, and, you know, but sort of left unchecked, it can become vague and hazy. But you know, I remember I had this memory come back a couple years ago, the first time I ever stole and the first time I ever realized, you know, I think sometimes also another thing that I thought for a long time in AA is that I was always this like self-centered, greedy, like person, always grabbing and snatching. And I never, you know, I sort of used all that stuff in the big book about like selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think the root of our troubles. You know, I thought that meant that I was like, a bad person essentially. And what I've learned over time is it doesn't mean, you know, not everything is because I'm this like crazy, insane alcoholic. A lot of things are, you know, I'm a human being and I have a lot of instincts that need a power greater than myself to scale them back. You know, just to give you an example of what I poured alcohol on top of, I remember when I was 5 years old, my mother wouldn't let us have candy for a while. And I remember we were on a road trip, as we were often, you know, we were often driving from state to state. And I was in the candy store and she had left me alone and I stuck a piece of gum down my pants. And it came out my pant leg, of course. Yeah, I mean, can't you just see me? Like, it's a five-year-old. And the cash register, like, right at that moment, I, of course, looked up to see, like, who's looking? And the cashier was like, where's your mother? And without missing a beat, I was like, oh, must have fallen on the floor. And I went out of the store, and I got into the back seat, and I started crying, of course, because I felt terrible. But then I became angry. I remember feeling angry at my mother. It's her fault because she won't let me have candy. And where am I going with this? The point is that, you know, my first sponsor, Annette, used to always tell me, she used to point at me, and she used to say, the gal in the mirror knows the truth. You know what's really going on. You know, and I would be like, okay. And so I would run out of the room, you know, I would go into the bathroom and I would look myself in the mirror and I'd be like, okay, Heidi, what's really going on here? And I'd be like, I don't know, you know, I really don't know. I have no idea. And it took me, you know, I still don't know sometimes what the truth is. But my point is that to me is, you know, I had that instinct without missing a beat to do something dishonest, to cover it up, and then to blame you for it. And then to have that guilt and remorse. You know, also, when I was 10 years old, I pulled my first geographic. Things were getting really bad at home. You know, my mom's, you know, her own thing was progressing. And my solution was, I'm going to move out. And so I ended up moving to California with my aunt. And around Christmas time, after I'd lived with my aunt about 6 months, I got a phone call saying that my mom had gone to rehab. And what happens when you go to rehab, if anyone's never been, you get a lot of information about, you know, so the family, my little sister and I got all this information about like how, you know, we had propensity for the illness, heredity, we were going to, you know, inherit this disease and how we better be careful, you better watch it. You know, so I had all these warnings. I identify with Bill Wilson so much when he says like ominous warnings which I failed to heed. And, you know, and what happened for me is instead of saying, oh, wow, I better be careful, you know, I had the idea on my own to steal alcohol from my father about, you know, a month later, actually. And I still remember that first time that I stole a beer from him. And I remember, you know, I had one little friend with me. And, you know, this was always the way I drank. I had one little hostage girlfriend. And, you know, and I would be like, let's drink, you know. And that was the activity, was we were going to drink. And there's this great line in Bill's story where he says, in the midst of the excitement, I discovered liquor. And it was a discovery for me. And one thing I know to be true is that normal people don't discover liquor. Like, but for me, it was a discovery. And from that point on, it was pretty much, you know, I mean, I don't have any glamorous stories. I mean, my the most glamorous story I have is, like, you know, drinking wine from the box from a wine glass and, you know, and photographing me and my best friend Melanie in the garden, you know, sort of looking, you know, thinking we were looking fabulous. You know, I had this, like, again, I had this story about myself that I was this glamorous sort of 25-year-old living in the West Village when really I was a 14-year-old living on Bainbridge Island in Washington State on a cul-de-sac, like drinking wine from the box and whiskey from a plastic jug. And, you know, what happened for me is my alcoholism progressed, my drinking progressed. I went from being a straight A student, from not being able to show up at school. I ended up in, you know, obsessed with older guys, compromising myself all over the place, stealing money from my dad. I used to steal money from my dad's wallet because I was like, well, he didn't pay child support for all those years. I'll just garnish his wages myself, you know. And so it's just like all this alcoholic thinking. And, you know, like I said, making promises to myself to quit drinking and then not being able to quit. I had a last summer, I want to kind of really get into recovery and how did I get here and what has happened? You know, why am I still here? Exactly, right? So I had a last summer of really, you know, just being hit by my own alcoholism, you know, trying to go to class and do these things I loved and having to turn around and not be able to go because I was still so drunk the night before. And my mom got sober again. She moved to a new town and I thought, I'll move. You know, it's my favorite solution. It's worked for me as a child. I'll move again, you know. So I decided I would move to another town and quit drinking and become a good girl. And I really thought it would be that easy. So I, you know, had my last night of drinking and I moved, essentially. And I was 9 months living. How much time do I have? Okay, great. And for the first 9 months, I was like a spectator in AA. I mean, I kind of came in and out. I had, you know, I didn't, you know, I saw the shades, you know, I thought, oh, great. You know, I had great hairstyles. I had crazy clothes. And I hit a bottom, essentially, in AA, in sobriety. I was dry. And I took the Burning Desire, and I was at a meeting, and I just, you know, puked out some cry for help. And this man named Armand was chairing the meeting. This was at the Here and Now group in Port Angeles, Washington. And instead of saying, thanks for sharing, kid, or keep coming back, he looked right at me and the whole meeting looked right at me. And he said, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no. And he said, get a sponsor. And I thank Armand every time. Armand just celebrated 35 years sober. And I thank him every time I talk to him. I thank him and Gary every time I speak to them for doing that with me, because they didn't, you know, they didn't let me go. They didn't go socialize with their friend after the meeting. They took an interest in me. So, you know, I plead, I that's one thing I love about this group is that I really see people like hunting for the newcomers. And that's something that I try to do too. So anyway, then the next week I found Annette. Annette didn't get sober till she was 63. She was 74 years old when she started sponsoring me. And she was like my twin. And Annette actually passed away. She passed away about 10 years ago now, but I have no idea how long it's been because she's still so alive. And I talk about Annette and I pass on whatever Annette gave to me every time I speak, because that's what she charged me with. I used to just look at her with those like puppy dog, you know, crying, you know, just, you know, eyes that you have when you're so, you know, and just crazy out of my mind and be like, thank you so much, you know, and she'd always say, well, just pass it on. You're going to carry this message to my great-grandchildren, you know, and it's funny. I actually sent a card to her great-grandchildren this Christmas. And anyway, so, you know, I just did whatever Annette taught me to do, you know, and really, like, I've grown up in AA, and I'm continuing to grow up. You know, Annette took me through the steps. She took me to conferences. You know, I got a service commitment. You know, this group trusted me, and I still, like, getting to do service in this group has just been unbelievable. When I first came to the Atlantic group, I had all these questions about, like, well, how's it run? What's the steering committee? I remember one night being at a diner. And somebody, you know, talking about this and saying, there's a steering committee member right there. I'm going to go ask them. And so I got up and I went and asked them. And so I became informed. And I just share that with you because if anyone has questions about anything in AA, Like, you can ask. And that's a tool that I've really used. You know, same thing with God. You know, one of my favorite lines in the Big Book is you know, where it says, do not let any prejudice you have against spiritual terms deter you from asking yourself what they honestly mean to you. And that is something that I have done again and again and again in my sobriety, is ask myself, well, what does this mean to me? You know, something that I've been thinking a lot about, and something that happened is, I remember last year when we had the election, and it was so exciting. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, I can't believe that I get to serve as chairperson. That's amazing. And the next day I went home, and I went back to Washington State to go and be with my mother and to go and help her deal with something really scary and hard. And, like, really, something really hard in our family, like, hard. Like, to the point where I was, like, I went through a period where I was really mad at God, you know? Like, really, God? Really, after everything our family's been through, you know? And you know what's cool is that, like, I have that relationship with God, and I can say that to God, and I can work through those questions. And doesn't mean I'm a bad AA, doesn't mean I have bad faith, it just means that I have a living, breathing relationship with God. But the whole time I was home, I kept wanting to say, Mom, I'm chair of the Atlantic Group, Mom, you know. And it just wasn't important, you know. Like, what was most important was for me to just be with her, you know. And, like, get her coffee and just be with her, you know, and be there for my sister and not make it about me. And there's a man named Scott R., and he often says you can't spend your AA currency at home. You know, you can't spend your AA currency there, meaning it doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter that I just heard a fifth step. It doesn't matter that I just, you know, whatever. It just doesn't matter. It's not even really important about me. What matters is that I'm here now. And, you know, just to get into some of the ninth step and some of the amazing ways that, you know, things have changed. Last night I got a card from my stepmother that said she was so proud to call me her daughter. And I have to tell you, if I had longer, I would tell you, my stepmother was a person that we really clashed. She married my father when I was, you know, they got together when I was at the height of my drinking, and we moved into their home, and I was like, awesome, we have a nice house now, finally, you know, and I just did whatever I wanted. And, you know, she was the exact polar opposite of me. And, I made a ninth step amends to her, and, you know, it was all of like a minute long, and she didn't want to hear it. She wanted to move on. But I have to tell you, since I made that ninth step amends, I've continued over the years to send her cards and thank her. She was the one person in my life who, she tried to like make a chart and check off my homework, and, you know, she tried to discipline me, which didn't work, by the way, but she tried. And, you know, and I'm so thankful that relationship has mended. And, you know, same thing with my mother. I can't believe it. I you know, my father, the amends I made to my father a few years ago, I made another amends to him. And I had to, you know, for me, an amends, it's not so much like, I'm sorry I did X. You know, of course it is, but it's really like, what have I done that's put a block up between you and me? What have I been doing that's been putting a, you know, like a barrier between you and me? And one of the things is I had hidden from my father for years how important AA was to me, because I was scared. I was scared that he wouldn't agree with me being there, you know, being in AA, because, you know, sometimes when you get sober, there's people in your life who are going to say, oh, you weren't really an alcoholic, or you don't really need to go to those meetings. And, you know, all I have to know is what's true for me. And so what happened is, because I'm, you know, I have dependence at depth and self-centered fear, is I hid it from my father. I would say, oh, I'm going to go meet friends for coffee. And so I sat with my father and in his woodshed, and I just said, you know, Dad, I've hidden from you all these years how important AA is to me. And I shouldn't have done that. You know, I regret that I did that, because I put a block up between you and me, and I'm so proud of you, and I love you, and thank you, you know. And since that time, I feel so, you know, our relationship has expanded and grown. I know I'm totally running out of time. Rajesh has been amazing this year. Rajesh one thing that Rajesh has really taught me, that you've taught me this year, Rajesh, is how to pray together. And it talks about that in our big book. And what's happened is Rajesh and I have prayed together before this meeting, just that we could, you know, be of service and, you know, get ourselves out of the way. And I don't think it's because of us, but I've noticed, like, so then we've started praying with other people, and there's this beautiful thing that I don't know if it's just because I just started to see it more, but I see people praying all over together, and it's weird because we're not a religious program, but, like, it's a spiritual program, and I know that, you know, ultimately, like, this is about me getting a relationship with God, but I do that through you, you know? I mean, I can't believe it. I remember being on the phone with Bob. Like, I called Bob, like, you know, 5 times a day, you know. Vince, you know, I called him all the time. And, you know, I don't know how to end. I just want to say thank you so much. And, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, are you glad this is almost over? Woo, you know, and stuff like that. And, I told my sponsor that, Ava, and I said, Ava, you know, people are asking me if I'm happy this is almost over, and she said, oh, no, it's not over. The work has just started, you know, blah, 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 you know, and she, and you know, she's right. I don't feel like anything is over. I feel like, you know, just because I'm not on the clean, I was on the cleanup crew, actually, I think my second year in the Atlanta group, and just because I'm no longer in the cleanup crew, I'm still on the cleanup crew, just so you know. I still look for trash, you know. Like, I'm still, like, we're all still guardians of, you know, extending our hands to the newcomer. So if you're new, welcome. And if you're visiting, welcome. Please stay. And, you know, just keep coming back because we need you. And if you're here now, you know, I thought for so long, you know, that I would have to, like, you know, that my bottom wasn't bad enough, or that, you know, I was afraid I'd be kicked out of AA, essentially. And nobody's going to kick you out of AA. And I'm so grateful just to all of you. I love you all so much. And just thank you so much. Thanks.